Audiences don't often get a chance to see films not only made by Vancouver filmmakers, but also set in Vancouver. Julia Kwan's film, Eve and Fire Horse, has been receiving attention not only locally, but internationally. Laura Lamb saw the film, and she's here with her thoughts. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Morning.
The publicity shows a little girl flying through the air, which must be Eve of the title. What's the Fire Horse?
Well, as Eve, who is the little girl, explains in a voiceover at the beginning of the film, in Chinese astrology, every 64 years, the year of the horse is the year of the fire horse, and children born that year are believed to be overly willful, and apparently in the old days were often drowned because of the pain and suffering they would bring to a family. In that image that's used in the publicity, Eve is swimming in a kind of an imagination of being drowned.
Drowning is pretty drastic for willfulness. Is Eve a particularly willful child in the film?
Well, no. You know, in that then you have to think. It shows sometimes Eve in her classroom, and you think, oh, every one of these kids was born in the year of the fire horse. Whoa, what a tough time it would be for the teacher if there was any truth to that. But actually, she's not really shown to be particularly willful. She's more extremely imaginative and perhaps perceptive beyond her years sometimes. As you might imagine, someone who's a stand-in for someone who becomes a film director, since this film is probably, or is partly autobiographical, there's only one minor act of rebellion shown in the film, and it's near the beginning of the film. And the guilt that Eve suffers from this is central to the theological quest, which forms the bulk of the film.
And so, with things like guilt and theology, it sounds like a fairly heavy film. Is that the case?
No. It isn't, actually. The mood ranges from comic to touching. It's sort of a nostalgic memoir about growing up in a Chinese immigrant family in Vancouver in the 70s, although it probably could be anywhere in North America. The difficulties that Eve and her sister, who is a little bit older than her, is also a major character in the film, are not glossed over, but they're central to what goes on in the film, but they're treated rather lightly and with a kind of a fresh touch.
What are these difficulties in the film?
Well, racism is touched on. It's shown as being a factor, but in an interesting way, it's not dealt with in a black and white manner, to turn a phrase, or a yellow and white manner. It's there, but it's sort of in the background. The central conflict is religious and cultural. And what happens is that Eve, led by her older sister, become Catholic. Her and her sister become Catholic converts, and trying to resolve those beliefs with the traditional Chinese practices that they have at home creates most of the comedy and is sort of central to the family conflict, the social conflict, the interpersonal conflict that goes on outside of the family, and even her inner psychological conflict. So I was quite struck by the theology in this film.
Are the parents opposed to the conversion to Catholicism?
Well, not really. The mother, when she hears about her daughter's interest in becoming Christian, says, this is an exact quote, but something like, two gods are better than one. The more the merrier, sort of thing. And she buys a crucifix, or several crucifixes, and sticks them up on their altar where they have the Buddha and the goddesses, ornaments, and where they give offerings to the ancestors. She also says, both Buddha and Jesus teach us how to be good, so they don't conflict. but in her mind, but actually the conflict happens between the two belief systems, between two opposing understandings of the world that the girls are then confronted with.
And how does the film treat the opposing theologies?
Well, the family religion is nominally Buddhist, but it's not the type of Buddhism that I, or probably most Westerners who've been curious about Buddhism, know about. It's not, you know, meditation and Eastern philosophy, you know, the Four Noble Truths or the, you know, all the suffering monks. It's really set of rituals and respect for the ancestors, rituals which show respect for the ancestors, but predominantly it's about luck and how a person's behavior can affect luck. So, for instance, chopping a tree has a magical effect on your luck because you've broken a life cycle. It can break the life cycle in your family. Cooking noodles, which are very long, will affect positively your longevity. But if somebody chokes on those noodles, that's a curse on the whole family. Luck is also shown to be finite in their worldview. So if you have a remarkable lucky event, you might have to leave where you're living because your luck in that place is all used up. If something, so in this kind of worldview, if something bad happens, for instance, a death in the family, it may be your fault because of something you did to upset the luck. And this very much plays into the children's common belief that's well understood, that children feel that bad things are their fault. In this system of belief, there's nothing you can do about it. It's done, it's your fault, and well, that's luck.
So we've talked about the Buddhism, the traditional belief system of the family. What about the Catholicism? What attracts the girls to it?
Well, as a Westerner, I guess I'm on more familiar ground here with the Catholicism, but I think the Catholicism gives the girls something to do about it, about their feelings of grief and guilt. They're first introduced to Christianity through Jehovah's Witnesses coming to the door and bringing them, giving them a book that shows these beautiful, kitschy pictures of heaven and so on. As the book says, if we all believe in Jesus, there would be no war and disease, and all the bad people will fall off the earth. So it offers solutions. And when the girls go to the Catholic Sunday school, the first thing Eve says is, I want to know about heaven. As you know, obviously another solution. And then, of course, Catholicism offers them all kinds of things they can do, for instance, penance. And they take that up with a vengeance, and they form their own little Catholic club called the Girls of Perpetual Sorrow, of which the two sisters are the only members, and undertake their own personal plan of penance. And also, when another crisis comes up in the family, they get the idea that by evangelizing and making converts to Catholicism, they can change things for the better in their own lives. And all these things are treated, you know, very comically. There's lots of room for humor in that.
And is there any conflict when the two worldviews collide?
Well, the mother at first thinks the idea of the girls becoming Christians is probably going to be good because she hopes it. She knows that there's a commandment that honor your father and your mother, and she thinks that will reinforce the values of honoring parents, which she sees as being something that's threatened in Western society, something that the family worries about. So she's hopeful about that, but instead, of course, it turns out that the Catholic doctrine is that it's a sin to worship other gods. So this creates a conflict with the girls and actually creates disrespectful acts towards the parents' traditional observances. So So that kind of that's the most obvious conflict. But then there's other conflicts which are more deeply inside the girls. For one thing, their beloved grandmother cannot be in heaven because she didn't believe in Jesus. They get this information from a stereotypically saccharine / severe nun who's their Sunday school teacher, who is played to a T to that stereotype that we're all familiar with. Another kind of classic moment of doubt happens when the family goes to see the film The Ten Commandments in Chinese. Eve asks her sister, well, when Moses parts the water and then it drowns, it covers up all the soldiers and drowns all the soldiers, why did God drown the horses too? So for Eve, both religions have a downside, which is the same, in that they both drown horses. They both make the innocent suffer. So those are some of the conflicts that come up, similar to many people's experience of childhood religion, I suppose.
And so in the end, does the film come down the middle, rejecting both belief systems because they both drown horses or because they both have problems?
It doesn't strongly reject either. In the film, the older sister is baptized. That's a scene in the film, and the parents are sitting proudly in the aisles watching this ritual occur. But as a viewer, as you see how these two belief systems are presented in the film, the Chinese beliefs certainly seem much more benign. There isn't really that much there. There isn't that much dogma that can create harm. The only thing that really hurts the children, or can be seen, I suppose, from our viewpoint as hurting the children, is this ultimate parental authority and the respect, the subservience that children have to their parents. But apart from that, their religious beliefs and their ideas about luck are very loose. There's really nothing that you have to do except these few rituals. Whereas the Catholic, a lot is offered. Salvation is offered, and heaven, so on, is offered, and it falls up short, and you right away hit upon that old hypocrisy that bothers so many people and causes people to leave the Christian Church. And there's a shot which really kind of summed it up, the difference between the kind of permissive worldview and the severe Christian worldview is on the altar. There's this fat, laughing Buddha figurine, and right next to it, the emaciated, suffering Christ. And it passes over that. You sort of get the feeling that, one of them is a lot easier to take than the other. So that I think is the theological underpinning of the movie in the end.
Well, thanks for talking to me, Laura.
You're welcome.
I've been talking to Laura Lamb about the film Eve and the Fire Horse. The film is currently playing at both Fifth Avenue Cinemas and at Tinseltown.